Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Macko. It's Bob. How you doing?
I'm good, Matt. I have a silly thing that irritates me that I want to share off the top before we get into baseball, which is a big thing that irritates me.
Do it.
You know how every so often you have to update your passwords? First of all, it's so hard to remember all of them because they change at different rates. So, you know, who knows what is what. But then the thing that really messes me up, because I am a bad typist, is how you can't see what password you're putting in. And then you like write old password and then new one and then confirm. And I never line them up, but you can't see what the letters are. They just put dots for password protection.
It's so annoying.
I don't understand why. Like, I mean, I get it in the sense that like nobody can look over your shoulder and steal your password. But like, honestly, how many of us have to worry about someone looking over our shoulder and quickly jotting down what the password to my laptop is?
No one. Never. Ever. But it's like,
what level of security clearance do you have to have in life where you think to yourself, well, I'm sitting at home in my office, but just in case someone has bugged the room or has put a camera in here and I don't know about it, we better not know what password I'm typing in, just in case. What do you think? Head of the CIA? Like, how important do you have to be?
Well, let me ask you, Bob, do you right now control the nuclear warheads?
Yeah, that's right. I'm Johnny NORAD.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, let's stay here for a second because I had to get a new phone. So then you got to update, like, and then, oh, what's your password for Hotmail? What's it for Twitter? What's it for Instagram? What's it for this? What's it for that? What's it to you? That's my question. You know what, Bob? I would agree to this right now. If I never had to use another password again, but I got, say, 5% of my net earnings taken away by hackers, I think I'd make that deal.
This is the great privacy conversation where people will say, you know, what do I care who hears my conversations? I'm pretty ordinary. What are they going to do to me? Right? That's the usual conversation. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with that one personally, because I think once things are put into law, slippery slope, let's just argue for slippery slope.
Okay.
This, however, is different. This is just an inconvenience. This is stupid. Like, I'm glad my ATM card has a password, you know, and when I'm using it, you know, I'll be a little protective to make sure people aren't looking over my shoulder because they are looking over my shoulder. But the idea of like obscuring what you're writing into your computer while you're writing it, just in case, is just an example of it's, you see this with COVID too, right? Like there's a lot of stuff that's just COVID theater. Which isn't to say that there aren't better health practices. Of course there are. But you go to places and they'll be like, you know, you can't stand next to someone within 20 feet without a mask on. It's like there's no public health regulation that thinks this, right? Like you're just being crazy about it. Like you are virtue signaling, as it were, you know. Anyway, this set me going, and this is clearly not more important than the Jays. Matt, I'm going to shut up because I saw on Twitter you wrote something that I totally disagree with, but it means something to you, that this series against the Yankees was the most important set of games that Toronto has faced since the championship run of the Raptors. They shit the bed. Matt, the floor is yours.
Yeah, well, let's go first with that tweet, because I think maybe, and it's Twitter, I think you can misunderstand. I said that series, that first home game against the Yankees, was the most important Toronto sporting event since the Raptors parade. And it's because all the humans got to be there. We've had almost 2 years of the Raptors in Florida, the Blue Jays in Florida or Buffalo, the Maple Leafs playing in empty arenas all across Canada. And of course, Game 7 against Montreal is a bigger one. But I'm talking about Toronto sports moment, having 30,000 fans, being able to cheer, the stakes of that series, the opponent being the Yankees, all those things being included. That to me was the most biggest Toronto event moment since the Raptors parade.
I think you hit it right there. The difference between the game and the event is really big, mm-hmm. because the way you describe it as an event, I can actually get behind that. We even talked on the pod a few weeks ago about how hard it was to enjoy the Jays run or even watch this team grow because they weren't doing it here.
Yeah.
And so that's all a great point. And it kind of speaks to the difference between the consequence of a particular game in a season and then what a sport can mean for a city. And I think you meant the latter, right?
Yeah. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I actually do agree with that. And it's really disappointing how it turned out. You know what I was thinking, Matt? And this is obviously not logical, but you know how when you watch a race like the Olympics are on, and it's the only time you watch long distance running, and you watch them jockey for position, and you can see there's a strategy for when you make your final break. You don't want to wait too long, and you don't want to start too early because you don't want to burn out.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Jays didn't plan to get hot when they did, but it's almost like the math has kind of come back to haunt them. Like, you can't stay that hot that long. If these same losses had been interspersed throughout that incredible run, we would have looked at this as they clawed back in but just couldn't do it, as opposed to they were right there and they blew it.
Yeah.
And it's almost unfair because I don't think the math works that way. But maybe it does. I don't know. What's your take on this?
It's just really disappointing. And I know everyone wants to get on Charlie Montoyo. On the first game, maybe left Ryu in for one batter too many. But Anthony Rizzo, it was a bloop single. And then, Trevor Richards, again, this is the first game, the Tuesday game. He shouldn't have pitched against Stanton. Well, Stanton golfed that shot out of nowhere. You know, that home run. And then last night, Robbie Ray, okay, third time through the lineup, except for one thing. I know that all happened in the sixth inning, but Robbie Ray, it was three up, three down in the third, the fourth, the fifth. Even that sixth inning started with DJ LeMahieu lining out or striking out. So, you know, like Robbie Ray was still pitching well, and then you blink your eyes and it's home run, walk, home run. And, you know, to me, this is the story of the stars of the Yankees getting it done in the two wins and the stars of the Blue Jays not getting it done offensively in the two losses.
The Robbie Ray point's a really good one because it almost reminded me of Clayton Kershaw when Kershaw would blow it in the playoffs, but he'd been so dominant and was so clearly great. Like, how do you not gamble on the guy that's done it over and over and over again? To your point about stars, these are the people that got you to exactly this point. So you can outsmart yourself by pulling those people out because they're built for these moments and it doesn't always work out. But if all managing is kind of just like a giant casino and you're trying to play smart bets, none of these really feel like stupid bets to me. They feel like bets that were reasonable and didn't pay off, which anybody who's played blackjack knows that happens.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it was an unfortunate, like, could you have done it differently? Yes, but it wasn't heinous. It wasn't like it was Steven Metz on the mound and was really laboring and was, you know, covered in sweat or something. You know, this was Robbie Ray, who deserves a certain bit of the benefit of the doubt. And he had been dealing the last three innings.
Right. And do you remember like years ago when Grady Little left Pedro Martinez in too long against the Yankees and he wound up getting shelled?
Oh, yeah.
And right. This wasn't that. Like, Pedro was so clearly gassed. And it was almost people were like, you know, stop it. He's already dead. You know, like, he just clearly left him in too long. I didn't see any of that this time around. Even Ryu, to your point, was you were not looking at it and saying, oh, my God, this can only go wrong. You know, he's a Cy Young candidate for the last 3 years. I know he's been having a tough time, but I watched enough Cito Gaston games to know sometimes you just got to bet on your best players.
And that's what happened. And the best players, though, forget about Robbie Ray, 1-for-10 with men with runners in scoring position. You know, they left like 9 guys on base.
Yeah.
And they scored 2 runs, just like they did in the Tuesday loss. They scored 2 runs. The offense was held in check by the Yankees.
It's so weird. Like, if you were to say there was a home and home, and at the end of it, the Yankees and the Jays split during a pennant race, you would go, that's a reasonable response, right? But and that's kind of what happened, except that all the games in New York were won by the Jays, and all the games in Toronto were won by the Yankees. Like, the math turns out to be exactly what you would expect, but the symbolism of both things, like beating the Yanks, suddenly catapulted them into everyone's attention, you know? And losing to the Yanks the way they did basically pulled the plug, even though they're one game out with, five left to go. Like, it's not a great situation, but we're past dire. We're not at dire just yet, you know? But it just feels so deflated, because even if they win one of those games, they're in a much better spot. There's so little margin for error. The thud today is a symbolic thud, as much or maybe even more than a mathematical one.
Yeah, because, to me, I don't even care anymore that they're technically still alive. These games against Baltimore have so less meaning to me, because against the Yankees, that was a controllable series. Yeah. You win this series, you get to control your destiny. Now there is no control. Now it's just about survive. And a controllable series is much more interesting than a survivable series, because what happens with Boston and Seattle and New York, those games are just as compelling as Jay's Baltimore.
In some ways, well, you can't say even more, but at least as much because of the math. Like, it's just math. You know, you're adding and subtracting numbers to come up with percentages. I don't want to sound like coldly analytical here, but if I told you at the beginning of the year that the Jays would fall just short with a 90 game season, you would probably and that they would have a meaningful contender for both MVP and Cy Young, it would actually seem like a best case scenario minus the playoffs part.
Yes, it absolutely would at the beginning of the year. But there's two things here. One, we get greedy. Our expectations change all the time. And that hot run in August, and every person in the media said the Jays, second best team to Tampa, Jays, most dangerous team if they make the playoffs. So we start hearing that and we start dreaming of it. It's like you think you're getting all the G.I. Joes for Christmas. You know, you didn't think about it. Then someone said, hey, you're getting G.I. Joes. You get excited. You wake up and you get socks. It might have been socks the whole time, but your expectations went up, and now you're not getting Destro and Cobra Commander. You're getting something from the Hudson Bay Company.
Yeah, not making the playoffs definitely feels like a stocking full of socks.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe, just a quick sidebar. Is G.I. Joe underrated or overrated as a franchise?
It's underrated because the movies were such shit.
Has someone got to figure out how to do G.I. Joe right? Because when you talk about IP, when we grew up, G.I. Joe was one of the best kid brands going, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so for all of this nostalgia, like in my life, G.I. Joe meant more than Transformers. How about yours?
Oh, Bob, that is close. That is a Sophie's choice, except for the net result is even more emotionally tragic than what happened in the movie.
So to me, it's like Ninja Turtles, then G.I. Joe, then Transformers.
I'm going Ninja Turtles third. I love Ninja Turtles, but they're going third. And between G.I. Joe and Transformers, it's like picking between Bordeaux and Burgundy. Ask me any day and I'll give you a different answer.
For me, the comic books pushed G.I. Joe a little bit ahead of the Transformers, because the comic books were kind of fun, and it was during a time when I was reading anything in comic book form. So it kind of gave me a narrative to work with.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, all of this obviously pales in comparison. By the way, have you seen the new Star Wars anime stuff?
I haven't. There's too much stuff on TV.
It's true, but honestly, it's really good. Have you seen any of Squid Game yet?
No, I've heard. I heard about Squid Game yesterday for the first time.
I'm five episodes in. It's excellent.
Okay.
It's so good.
Let me guess. Just by the preview, it's. Is it a metaphor about how corporations enslave, rich corporations enslave the citizens?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with a creepy baby doll head or something.
It's like the movie Parasite, that won the best picture a couple of years back.
Love that movie.
It's like that meets a really cool adult graphic novel.
Okay, so is it like Hunger Games meets...
Yes, that's exactly it. It is like Hunger Games, but Hunger Games, if it was done by like an edgy comic book artist, right? Like Hunger Games is kind of like Twilight, but not as schlocky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like you go further down the kind of cred trail while... you know what? Have you seen the movie Snowpiercer?
Yes.
Imagine Snowpiercer meets Parasite.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a great first date movie.
Yeah, it's pretty dark, and there's a lot of really bad violence. By the way, I sent you that picture of the Jaws biting Alex Kintner. What'd you think?
Oh, I loved it. Loved it.
Right?
Yeah.
Was it freaky?
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, yes, it was. And speaking of Jaws, when I was at the cottage, I literally just came back to the city last night. I'm just all over the place with my schedule. It keeps changing. I was at the cottage, and my niece, Chloe, was like 17. Her friend was there, and my older brother, Scott, and his wife. Like, there was a bunch of people from a bunch of different generations. I threw on Jaws, you know, because you know when you're with a bunch of people and no one can pick what to watch and no one wants that pressure and all that. I just threw Jaws on. And guess what? Movie made it the whole way through.
Love it. You know, what are other movies like that? I would say Independence Day is another movie you can put on with everyone in the room and people will stick with it.
Shawshank.
I don't know. Prison movies, Shawshank. I think. I think teens don't want to watch Shawshank. It's too mature. And I don't mean mature in the sense of disturbing. I mean, it's just, you know, like there's a degree of humanity that I think you have to have in order to appreciate it. Most 16-year-olds don't.
Well, there's, I mean, beyond the, I'd like to say that Andy fought the good fight. I'd like to say that, you know, just with the sisters. That was, you know, beyond that, it's good for the whole family.
Well, you're one of these people who's a Shawshank cultist, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
There are people out there who will say, oh, my God, it's like literally one of the greatest movies ever made. And I think those people are insane. It is a perfectly fine movie. It is quite entertaining. There are good performances. It is well written. But I don't think it would crack my top 3,000 best movies.
You are such an idiot. Like, that's just the dumbest thing that ever came out of your mouth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the Jays.
Back to the Jays.
I have a silver lining. It kind of feels like it'll be Seattle that makes it through. And so it won't be like we're the fourth team in the East and the other three made it. I think Boston is cooling off too. And if Boston can lose, at least someone else's pain is kind of satisfying.
Yeah. The other side though is, wait a minute, Seattle, the team that got hot, but with a minus run differential, they get to get in. There's something about that doesn't feel so shit hot either.
Who would you rather see in the playoffs, Seattle or Boston?
Right. Seattle. Yeah,
right. Like, logically, what you say makes sense, but I don't want to watch the Red Sox play. Do you?
No. 100%. You're right. By the way, someone was thrown out on Twitter. If you want to enjoy the day today, put a parlay on money line on Boston, New York, and Seattle. So, hey, if they all win and it hurts the Jays, at the very least, you win a lot of money.
Right. Then you have the complicated moral position of rooting against your own best interests as a fan.
Yeah, I know. But hey,
I'm always shocked how many people have no problem with that. And that's because I'm not a gambler. Like, I'm in it only for the allegiance. But I love to watch people like Wheeler. Wheeler loves the Philadelphia Eagles. Mm-hmm. And like loves. But if he thinks they're going to lose, he's okay to bet against them.
Oh, I bet against the Giants week one against Denver. The easiest money I've ever made.
Right? It's so funny, though, because is it just that you can't lose or is it that you can't win? Is this a glass half full or glass half empty situation?
It's glass half full, Bob, because we all root for team money and we all root for our team, and one of them will win.
Well, and it also speaks to the truly smart, savvy fan knows that sometimes when you lose, you win in a draft situation with a cap. If you have a hard cap, even a soft cap, really, but and you can only really get better by drafting. And I was always amazed, and it was actually Todd Hayes who we worked at with at Off the Record who taught me about this, because he used to routinely cheer against the San Diego Chargers, his beloved San Diego Chargers, because he just wanted a higher draft pick. Like, once he was out, he was prepared to say, let's tank these next five games. Just like a third of the season. But it's like, as opposed to like college football, where there is no joy in losing. You always just want them to win next week.
It is that phenomenon of when you switch from looking at playoff standings to draft rankings. And once you start reading, Mel Kiper or Bob McKenzie or Keith Law, Yeah, well, maybe not as much with baseball because we don't know anything about a baseball prospect. But yeah, we do that. We all do that switch from let's win to let's win the draft.
Well, this is like an autumnal thing, right? It's like when the leaves turn. The second you see the leaves turn, you go, okay, now I'm totally I'm totally aware that summer is gone. Like, it's a beautiful morning out there. It feels kind of bright. It's a little cool, but you can say to yourself, ah, it's an early fall morning. But, you know, you haven't really gone into the winter's coming mindset yet. The second the leaves change, and then really when they fall, you're like, okay, here we are. We went through this with the Raptors. Are they going to fight to get into the play-in? And then eventually you're like, you know, Masai kind of helped us out with this one. He's like, play-in? No. Any more thoughts on the Jays, buddy?
One more thought on it. I think part of why this one's a real bummer, it's not just about expectations. It's because there's a good chance you could lose both Simeon and Robbie Ray. Yeah. Like if you whispered in my ear, the Jays, their bats are going to go cold. They're going to miss the playoffs, but don't worry. Ray and Simeon are signing 5-year deals. It's a lot of money, but they're signing 5-year deals each. I think we'd all feel much better about it. And we should be excited about this team. There's a lot of good pieces. And it was nice seeing Nate Pearson dominate last night. But if we knew those two guys were coming back, I think the sting would be less, because it does feel like, wow, we wasted a lot of really good individual seasons.
It's a very interesting point, because we've experienced disappointment with, like, let's just assume they don't make it. Miraculously, they could get through, but let's just assume they don't. Between the Jays, the Raptors, and the Leafs, you can see different mindsets that you have to employ for coping with disappointment. The Leafs is frustration, but you've got all those guys, you've got your core signed up long-term. So if you believe in them, it mitigates the frustration. If you don't believe in them, you feel like you have to hit detonate. With the Raptors, this is where they were inevitably going to be, and they've signaled by getting rid of Kyle, and just, you know, all of their signals are that we're loading up for the next phase now. So you're at the beginning of something new. And then with the Jays, you're in a weird middle. You're in a weird middle because your young guys are getting good enough to win, but there's some key pieces that could also be gone. And that creates a different level of anxiety. You can hate the Leafs, but you can't say that they're not set for the next few years. You can be mad at the Raptors, but you can't say that they're not kind of mad at themselves and ready to move on. But with the Jays, you're like, fuck, how do I think about this team? Like, they sign up these guys, they can win 95 games next year. They don't, and they could go back to being an 84-win team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they'll be better than an 84-win team, because they will find, you know, they'll find players to replace them. I mean, it's so hard to do what the Jays did. It's so hard to find two of those guys.
I was going to say, like, don't be so sure. Ryu, I don't think, is going to go back to his Cy Young form. I think it's fair to say he's older. And, you know, if he's an effective third, fourth, or fifth starter for the Jays at this point, then all of this has been worth it, because he's given up lots, but he's not going to be a number one or a number two guy. You know, Robbie Ray stepped in kind of out of nowhere. Did you expect this? I didn't expect this.
But nope.
He became the rock. There are other guys within the rotation where you go, this is really good. But let's not forget, the reason the Jays are in this shitstorm is because the rest of the division is so fucking good. And Marcus Simeon now has the record for most home runs by a second baseman in a season. Like, I don't think Biggio's kid, Kevin, is going to fill that in if he ever comes back. Like, where are they getting those runs back from?
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, the hope is that, you know, you got Berrios for another year, Alek Manoah, Nate Pearson, hopefully can finally, you know, and he looked great yesterday, which is, of course, the smallest of small sample sizes. And, you know, if you can bring back one of Ray or Marcus Simeon, you're in a good place. Bichette and Vlad should get better. You got Teoscar Hernandez. Like, there is talent here. But the point 100%. the point you made, though, is that having good talent is great. But when you're in a great division, you need a lot of great talent.
Yes. With this team clicking on all of these cylinders with even nice surprises, we're fourth.
And that's it. That's it right there. With the two best signings in the offseason, with Vlad having is, you know, number two in the MVP, they're still fourth in the American League East.
Dude, Aaron Judge killed us last night. Fair?
Yes.
Most teams don't have a few of them, but Giancarlo Stanton also killed us, right?
Yes.
Like, the Yankees just have a lot of these guys. And the thing that you always know is if anything happens to one of them, they'll get another. Because there's no... Because people want to play there and because they have the money to pay them. You know, like Gerrit Cole, you know, it drives you crazy. I remember him pitching with the Pirates and thinking, I can't wait till he's beating us in the American League East, you know? We haven't had this conversation in the city in a long time, just the frustration of being Toronto in this division. I'm not even calling our team cheap. But, you know, we have to be honest. Like, we got Marcus Semien on a contract that was friendly for the team because he had something to prove, which he did.
Yes.
Those guys tend to leave once they've proven what they need to.
Yeah, the Jays aren't cheap, but the question is Rodgers, are they prepared to try to go and be one of those 200 plus million salary teams?
That's
are they
it.
Prepared to be Yankees, Mets, Dodgers? Are they prepared to be that? Because if they have any hope of keeping both of them, hell, even keeping one of them is going to cost a ton. That's what you're going to have to do. And if you're Rodgers, you got to think about it. Like, listen, you got all this momentum. You bring those guys back next year. You're getting 30, whatever the max is for Jays games, you're getting it. You're going to get the eyeballs, you know, for your TV. It makes so much sense for them to do that. But I mean, then again, it's easy for me to spend someone else's money.
Well, and somebody has to want to do it because there are other organizations that will also pay like crazy. And we have to present the case. Like, George Springer made us feel great because it was kind of almost like a Tavares thing, but not quite, in the sense that, like, you went out and paid for a guy who was highly desirable, but didn't really have too many asterisks. You know what I mean? Like, Hyunjin Ryu is older. We paid a lot for him, but, you know, it's not like you paid for a guy in his prime who was 26 years old. Trading for Berrios is great. You know, he's durable. He's an outstanding pitcher. We got him for one more year, but we got him via trade. It's like, when these guys have the choice to leave, how do we, a city, an organization, all of that, create a case that's compelling enough to say, stay here and win? Because there are other organizations who can make that case too.
It's, I mean, what you hope for is that these guys look at the young talent, Pearson and Manoah and Vlad and Bo, and be excited. Yeah. Yes, I want to. I can win with these guys. And listen, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, killed the Jays. But Stanton also spent 2019 and 2020 basically on the injured reserve for most of the year. You know, it's up to Rodgers the money and to make the case. And as long as you don't get blown out by another team, as long as you are competitive and you've done all your due diligence, that's all you can really ask for as a fan.
Do you remember when there was the blind bid for the arbitration rights to Yu Darvish and the Jays were in there and it was kind of disclosed, maybe it was official, maybe it wasn't, I can't remember now, but that they were like tens of millions of dollars behind the bids of other teams for the rights to Yu Darvish. And you kind of just slap your head and say, come on, guys, like, play the game, get in the game. But this isn't that. I we used to have a Rodgers is cheap conversation all the time and it was justified. I don't feel like this is that group anymore, but kind
it's
of like
not.
This,
go ahead. No, just because, again, they signed Ryu, and to your point, they signed Springer. They're no longer a cheap team. They're an upper middle class team.
They're a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer.
Yes.
You know, they are the upper middle class.
But they ain't a CEO.
No, they're not a hedge fund owner like the way the Yankees are.
Yeah, they're not that. They're not.
Dodgers own a tech company.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was Chris Rock when he was talking about rich versus wealthy. Shaq is rich, but the owner who signs his checks is wealthy. And there was some line of about how, yeah, that guy's so rich, he invented the color red. You know, like something something like that.
That's exactly it. Well, when I look at the Dodgers and I think all the terrible things that have happened to that franchise in the last 2 or 3 years, just like injuries or like athletes imploding, and yet they're still right in there, you know. It's because all they do is get great talent. Like watching Max Scherzer pitch for the Dodgers right now is just bizarre. Like, it just never ends. It's like a shark's teeth. Like, one pops out, another one comes back in, you know. Like, they have nothing but stars. And it's just like Amazon money versus being the guy who owns Fortinos.
Yep. And listen, you're going to go on a great vacation if you're with the guy who owns Fortinos. But, you know, with Amazon, hey, do you want to go to space? You know, there's a difference between we're staying at Turks and Caicos versus, you know, there's the moon.
So it's like Tampa Bay is the luxury condo that's on the island. The Jays are the guys who own the condo. And the Yankees are the guys who own the island.
Yeah, exactly.
Raptors. Let's talk a little bit about
before Kings. Before we get to the Raptors, I had a quick analogy I wanted to throw by you.
Okay.
So the Amazon, I'm not calling it a documentary because that would be an insult to documentary filmmakers. But the Leafs thing that came out on Amazon that was released last night, documenting last season. Yeah. First question: do you have any interest in watching it?
I have none.
Okay, good. So I'm the same way, and here's how I view it: watching I think it is Amazon series on, I should know this, on the Maple Leafs, is like it's been 2 weeks since the divorce, but I'm going to watch our wedding videos. Like, why the holy fuck would I want to watch that?
It is an interesting case study in self-flagellation to go. Yeah. If there were disclosure moments, if we found out that there was like a showdown between Sheldon Keefe and Mitch Marner about how he was going to be used on the power play, we would all watch that. That's journalism. But documenting a season that I hated, great analogy about the wedding videos to the divorce I just had.
Yeah.
Is this it's making like my life better?
No, it's not. It's like I'm home by myself. As my first night there all alone, she's moved out. I'm pouring myself a big glass of booze.
And I was thinking that too, but you're not just pouring yourself a big glass of booze. You're pouring yourself a big glass of booze that you got like in a promotion at a gas station.
Yeah.
Like one of those giant tumblers that says like has the name of like a gas company on the side of it that you got for 99 cents.
And you're drinking it far too quickly. And, you know, there you're doing your vows and, you know, she's always going to be there and you're her best friend and you give her strength and, you know, you make her a better person. And now your house is empty. That to me is like watching this Leafs series.
I always know that I like rock bottom for me in terms of self-medicating is when I pour the wine into the McDonald's Olympics tumbler that I have.
There you go. Yeah. Yep.
Lone wolf whiskey for when no one's coming over.
See, at least for me, Bob, when I hit rock bottom, at least it's classy. Like I'll still decant the wine that I'm drinking alone when I'm sad, but I'm still going to make sure the tannins are a little smoothed out.
See, your kind of decrepitude is like rich guy decrepitude. Which never feels like it can be true decrepitude. It's like pooping your pants while you're wearing a tux.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that would suck.
It would. Well, I think in any pants is pretty bad.
Yeah, that's true.
At least when you're wearing a tux, people go, there's a story here.
I feel bad for the tux rental place when you bring it back the next day.
I think that's one that you just like leave on the door handle. At 6:30 in the morning, 2 hours before it opens.
Oh, yeah. You never go back there again. In fact, you probably have to move to a new town because you don't want to worry that you're going to run into one of the employees on the street.
Oh, man. Okay. Over to the Raptors now, who are not interesting right now. Not interesting, fair to say. Is there anything you want to talk about with the Raptors? I guess we talk mostly Toronto sports. We're obliged to say something. What do you think?
The only thing I'll say is just from a, I'll go back to a gambling perspective is, once again, 35 and a half wins is the over under right now. I love the over every year, except for last year. Everyone always puts the Raptors at a low number. The Raptors always go well over it. Like, you know, I don't think this is a championship team, but I think this team's going to be far better than last year, even without Kyle Lowry. Just, I'm going Captain Obvious here, Bob. They're at home. There probably won't be some massive COVID thing that wipes them out. You know, to me, eventually, you know, Siakam will be back and he won't be 20 pounds underweight. You know, I'm pretty excited just to have the Raptors back in my life and back here in Toronto.
I actually like the under.
Really?
I do, because I think the smart money is going there. And I think everybody is going to think with their hearts, because, you know, you mentioned how there's no Kyle. Absolutely true. People talk about Fred being the guy who steps up. But let's not forget, it's not just that Fred steps up into Kyle's role. It means someone has to step up into Fred's, which means how much do we believe in Malachi Flynn to be as good as Fred VanVleet was? Fred VanVleet was a borderline all-star. Malachi Flynn, hopefully, is like a reasonable player that can give you 25 good minutes a night. There's a real drop-off in the backcourt there. And then not having Siakam, not only does he have to rehab his injury, he has to come back from it. And then if they're not in a playoff hunt, like, he's coming back into a situation which is already non-competitive. So the Raptors have already shown they're not in any real hurry to trade for better talent if they don't think they can go anywhere with this. So he may come back and that may help them win some games, but I would not be shocked if he came back into a Raptors team kind of looking at next year already, depending on how he rehabs. And then have they really solved their problems at center? I mean, it's not going to be Alex Len or Aaron Baines, but it's not like they're good at center. Ken Birch is perfectly fine, you know, but he's not like a good NBA player. And then you've got Scottie Barnes, who I think we're all excited to see, but he's not even going to start. So it's not like you're bringing in a Jalen Suggs to Orlando where you think, here's a kid who's ready to play now and we think is going to help us be better now. Scottie Barnes is a 2 to 3 years down the road kind of guy. So when I look at all of this, I think, you know, things could break good and they might get to like 36, 37 wins, but they're kind of shit.
Ah, see, I go the other way on this. First, I don't think the Raptors are going to be dedicated to a tank again. They spent a lot of money on Siakam, on OG Anunoby, and Fred VanVleet. I don't think you do that sort of contracts and you're still looking to be a bottom three, bottom five team. I think this is a high floor, low ceiling team. I think OG Anunoby is going to be even better. I think VanVleet will be 3 to 4% better. I think, you know, Malachi Flynn, Gary Trent Jr., I think all these guys, they're not going to take giant leaps, but I think they'll be a bit better. They're going to be at home. They're not going to be getting booed during home games. They went on a great run before COVID hit them. You have Nick Nurse, one of the top coaches in the league. And for Siakam, I think whatever the hell that was going wrong with him, I think all of that's passed. So I think 35 and a half, this feels to me like a 42 and 40, 41 and 41 team.
All right. So let me throw this rebuttal again. I don't think they're dedicated to the tank. I think they're going to want to see what they have. But what we've seen is they're not willing to fight to be in the middle. I think Masai is smart enough to know that more than just like fighting to be somewhere between the 7th and 10th seed, and playing a play-in game, it's just better to have the lottery assets because they are restocking the pond. So my point is, if they're pretty good, I don't think they're going to be in the market to get better. Not in the way that other teams are going to be, and that could cause a separation right towards the end. And if we're not playing super competitive games, those 4 or 5, 6 games at the end of the year, where some teams are fighting tooth and nail to get into the playoffs, and you're kind of not, you know, this will add up. All of these things will add up. I actually think it's a really smart bet to go under because of where the Raptors are in their trajectory, but also the fact that when people say, like, we get sucked up by narrative so much in Toronto. When we say OG Anunoby is going to be better, I think that's true too. But what does that mean? Like, do you think he's going to suddenly become Paul Pierce?
No, but I think he's going to He's going to be still one of the better defenders in the NBA. And true. Last year, his usage rate went up, but also his shooting efficiency didn't go down. And that, to me, is always the most remarkable thing.
Okay, so Paul Pierce, I don't know. It just name popped into my head for some reason. But, like, let's say he became, like, do you think OG Anunoby could be a Chris Middleton type player in the sense that he's a complementary star to an actual star? 100%. Could he be that good? See, I think people underrate Chris Middleton then. Like, he's really, really, really good. And OG Anunoby is quite good. I'm happy the Raptors have him. I love his defense. He brings a lot to the team. I agree. He probably can grow. But, you know, we get seduced by this idea that everyone's going to be a Pascal or a Kawhi, where they come in and they're one thing, and then somehow they become light years better. That almost never happens in the NBA. You know that. OG's not a rook. He's been around for a few years. He will get better. He's not going to become a superstar.
No, I don't think he's going to be a superstar. I don't think Middleton's a superstar. I think
he's
OG
not going to become a star then. We love Fred, but Fred is in the middle. Fred is in the bottom of the top of the pack in terms of NBA point guards.
If you look, well, I don't know. It depends which analytics you use. There was a bunch where, like, his underlying numbers were actually really, really good. I mean, my problem with him is his inability to finish around the rim. He's got to improve on that. But my final thought here on this, Bob, and it's good that we disagree. Maybe we could put down a little wager. But every year, aside from last year where, you know, they weren't home in COVID, every year the Raptors for the last, like, 7 years, they've gone over the number. It's one thing that Vegas has consistently done. And that's rare for, like, 6-7 years in a row for one team to always have the same result, always hit the over every year. The Raptors they're always, I think, one or two wins off of what they should be at minimum. And they're always faded by Vegas.
Okay, two things. And then these would be my final two thoughts. I hear what you're saying. But I would also say, when fans say all these guys have to do is be better than they were last year, the players have to do is just be better than they were, that almost never happens. Mm-hmm. And if it happens in some cases, other players are worse. There's just this idea of, you always get this with athletes when you really know their story. Like, if they were another team, they were the Indiana Pacers, you could analytically say, you know, Miles Turner, he's all right. Right. But if he's a Raptor, all of a sudden it's like, do you know how good this guy could be? You know, some of these guys aren't going to be as good as we want them to be or think they are. And that's just the reality. You know, like, it's like the Leafs when they sign, you know, Jimmy Vesey. Oh, Jimmy Vesey, he's going to be amazing. That guy has so much talent. Remember how much everybody wanted him? He was gone after that. Timothy Liljegren. Yes, I fell into this. It was like, oh my God, he was projected number two at one point. We got him in the low tier, in the mid teens. We're geniuses. He's going to be great. No, he isn't. You know, like, when you love a team, it's like your old kids. Like, I'm convinced that Charlotte isn't just going to run the UN. She's going to turn into a business and own it.
Ooh, good for her.
You know, but the reality is that probably won't happen. I just don't see it. Because even when I say it probably won't happen, I don't believe it.
You know, the thing is, Bob, we actually agree. I 100% agree with you on the idea that for everyone to get better, that rarely happens. But I also think going 36 and what is that? 36 and 46 is not that hard of an ask.
Two of their best players, actually their two best players, won't be there to start the season. One of them's never coming back and one of them's going to be out for a while rehabbing a serious injury. So, you know, any other team where you would say their two best players are gone and their third best player is stepping up into a new role. In fact, I don't even know if you can't say who is the Raptors' third best player. It's either OG or Fred VanVleet. We don't know yet. I think we'll see how they step up into their new roles. But there's a lot of question marks around that. But we've chosen to say, I am sure they can handle this. In fact, they will handle this. That's a big leap.
I think going 10 games under 500 is a very reasonable goal for the Toronto Raptors.
It all comes down to the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Right? If they're doing pretty well, I'll be wrong. But if they're doing meh, I think this organization is prepared to do what it needs to get more assets.
Well, I think it's hilarious today to bet the money line and bet Baltimore to beat Toronto and bet on the Yankees, Boston, and Seattle. Go for the Depression Quartet bet against the Blue Jays.
And the Raptors and, season.
But on the other side, on the Raptors, I'm more than willing to take the over. If I was going to, though, Bob, place a bet on needing good legal help, I know a place that you always win. Whether it's the spread or the money line, it's Jeff Pollack. He is our sponsor. He's our lawyer. If you need legal help, assistance, anything in between, contact Jeff Pollack. That's jeffpollack.com. That's Jeff with a G, two Fs. JeffPollack.com. The phone number, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088. You'll feel like the favorite, and you'll always cover. How's that?
You know what we should do? Yeah, it's great. I actually have, it just popped in my head. I think this could be a really good idea.
Yeah.
So the second thing I wanted to say, because I said I had two final thoughts, is we should bet on this, but I can't bet you, Matt, because you still haven't paid off the last bet that I won. Which was you and I betting. Yeah, you don't even remember anymore, but we were still on the air together.
This was
Federer and Tiger Woods.
Clayton Kershaw?
No, this was Federer and Tiger Woods. We bet who would be the next one to win a major. And you said it would absolutely be Tiger, and I said it would be Federer. And in fact, it was Federer. He came and had that, you know, sort of late career resurgence. And we bet a steak dinner, and you kind of smiled and gave me that look like, I'm never paying you. And you still haven't. I still don't have my steak dinner. So why don't we bring Jeff Pollack on the phone and present our cases and let him judge what the payment should be? Like, are we past the statute of limitations? Like, how does it work? What's the statute of limitations on the bet?
3 weeks. A couple thoughts, Bob. One, there's no evidence that you've ever been a Federer fan. I don't know where this is coming from. I've always been Team Fed.
Yeah, and I would also say that I wouldn't shoot my mouth off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Two, I'll, you know, and you're right, and I apologize. Are you comfortable going inside restaurants? That's it for me, Bob. I worry, you know, I worry about, you know, some people are not comfortable yet. So that's why it hasn't happened.
So that's why we bring on Jeff Pollack, and he can mediate this. He can be like our arbitrator so that we can come to a resolution, because maybe I am nervous to go into a steak restaurant, but could you give me then $75 worth of gift receipts to go to M&M Meats, like certificates?
Here's the problem with all this.
I go to your home and you cook me a steak?
Sure, we'll do that. I do that in a heartbeat. The only issue about bringing him on the phone, do you know how to do that? Do you know how to technically put that together? Because guess who doesn't? This guy. Yeah,
no, for sure. So we'll just have to have him come over, and then we'll do the mic swap thing, or we'll share a mic like Bruce and little Steven.
Yeah, that's it. That's how we're going to do it, like we're doing Live Aid, Bob. We're all going to be in front of one mic singing about Africa.
I was out with Jonas the other day because we hook up every once in a while just to sort of talk about life and the Leafs. Jonas Siegel. And I thought to myself, I'd love to have him on the pod, but like, I don't want to embarrass ourselves because his pod seems kind of legit. Like, they actually even have a producer who's good with the Leafs report. And, you know, you and I are sharing a mic. I kind of like, I don't feel shame very often, but I kind of felt a bit of pod shame there.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not doing that.
Are we better than their pod? Because we used to, when we used to be on the air, we felt we were better than every show out there. Do we have the same cockiness about other pods?
I mean, we're better than them, but that's because, you know, Myrtle's a weak link. You know it, I know it, everyone at The Athletic knows it. He's keeping those guys back. And by the way, Merrick and Friedman, you need 31 thoughts to figure it out. Hey, how about a little brevity there, assholes? Oh, we're going to do 31. Guess what? We can do it in 30. We'll save you time and give you all the info you need.
So self-absorbed.
Yeah.
To think that I would sit with them for 31 thoughts.
Yeah, exactly. 31.
Who else can we take a shot at? I've never listened to James Duthie's Rubber Boots podcast, but he's an idiot, so I assume it sucks.
Yeah, it's him going, oh, and there's the time I was at the Super Bowl, and I was hanging around with Andy Rooney. And but I like Lester. I just don't really. And I like Christoph Mamona. I just don't like Duffy.
You know, oh, but is it one of those things where, like, the awful host, like, relies on his more fun and engaging counterparts to carry him across the finish line?
What an asshole.
Oh, man, I hate that guy. Who else? We need Landsberg to get a pod so we can hate that one, too. Who else should we hate?
Oh, that's a good question. Like, just some of the other... I'm trying to think of some of the other sort of more local podcasts. You know, like
there is no Tim and Sid anymore, so, you know...
I have no idea what's going on. By the way, Merrick is what's like, or maybe it's something we talk about. It's finalized, but is Merrick getting like a national show, or what's happening with Jeffy?
You know, I never talked to Merrick. Well, actually, in like the last months, I haven't talked to Merrick about pretty much anything because we've both been busy, and I'm doing more in the music world than I am in the sports world these days. So we don't really have a ton of overlap. But I would say, like, Merrick. I don't know that anybody is ever going to know what to do with that guy because you can do everything with that guy.
Agreed.
You know, it's like, it's an interesting conundrum if you're trying to figure out where do we put this guy in the best place because he's literally good at everything.
Always my favorite guest on Off the Record.
Man, he helped us out a lot. He helped us out a lot.
Maybe hey, guys.
Well, I'd say we invite him for the steak dinner, but, you know, as a vegan, he'll just have the sides.
Yeah, I don't ever want to have a meal with Jeff. I don't need to sit for 2 hours and feel shame about my caloric intake.
Okay, I've buttered him up enough to say he never uses butter. We went and stayed at his place, and, you know, the kids slept over, all that. We had fun. We slept over, too. We woke up, and you know what we had for lunch the next day? Potatoes. No, but just potatoes. Like, they put a bunch of potatoes on a tray and served potatoes.
Huh? That's it?
But here's the thing. That's because they eat for what the human body actually needs, as opposed to entertainment.
That sounds horrible. I mean, that's absolutely
horrible. But the guy's in his early 50s, and he can run a marathon backwards. You know what I mean? His kids are high-performance athletes. His wife is like a super athlete. Like they're in the best shape anyone could be in. So, like, you know, that's the right way to do it. But then the problem becomes, just as you said, who wants to be that good? If it can't, like, if it can't sides with butter.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know what, it might be the, it's, I don't know if I'm going to say it's the right way. I'm going to say it's one way, and it's a very positive one. And you know, all the best to him, Mazel Tov. He looks fantastic and good for him. I could never do that. You know, though, one theory before we end this, and we'll just keep on reckless speculation of media people. I could see Jeff eating meat, but only if he killed the animal himself and then said like a little prayer of thank you to nature and to the animal as he was, you know, as he was taking the skin off.
Or if it was like part of a ayahuasca ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, one thing I love about Jeff is like, kind of like Jeff O'Neill in this way, like business from the chin up, tats all the way down.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
You know, like if Jeffy ever did the show with his sleeves rolled up, you would see he has a second set of sleeves, the one that have been inked into his arm, you know? And it always makes me laugh because he's such a smart, strategic guy. Like, he has a good head on his shoulders, like how he's built his career. But he just does not look like the kind of person who thinks that way. He's the most interesting guy in hockey. You know, we obviously love Jeff very much. He is the most interesting guy in hockey. He really is. Doesn't mean pod, though.
Oh, no, it's pod sucks. I mean, you know, first Wyshynski, all right. And then now Elliot, you know.
You and I have been too nice. You know, you and I have been too nice. See, you missed the sandpaper that I bring your career, because when we used to work together, you were always happy to just do a good show and be around a bunch of people that are fun to work with. And I was always like, let's beat everybody. Mm-hmm. And between the two of us, we found a happy balance. You need my sandpaper back, man. Yeah. You need my anger and emotional emptiness to help drive your career.
I love it. That sounds neat. Let's get together and have a delightful meal, and we can discuss all the evil we're going to do.
It starts with just all the pods we hate. I feel like today was a really positive step.
Fuck you, James Myrtle. Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.